Welcome to What in God's Name. She is Shayna Appel.
And he's Chris Owen.
Shayna, it's great to see you.
Good to see you, Chris, on this beautiful day now that the gray skies have cleared, the rain has stopped. It's cold, but it's a beautiful, clear, crisp, sunny day up here in New Hampshire.
We're doing current events and culture from a philosophical and theological point of view. Be curious, go deep, and shine the light. Those are our core values. And Shayna, I wanted to make a report. Last week, I mentioned that we would be sharing the results of our fall initiative to increase our audience. We've been asking you, our listeners, to share What in God's Name with your friends and social network. I'm so pleased to report that, Shayna, our listenership is up 40%.
Woohoo!
Over the last 6 months. So I looked at our listenership from last spring, compared it to what we've been able to do this fall, and it's an increase of 40%.
That is amazing. Listeners, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You guys are doing a great job out there. Keep up the good work.
And Shayna, I also need to share this. Our two least listened to shows this fall were when you were out.
Oh. Well,
when you weren't feeling well with your chemotherapy.
Chris, that has to be happenstance because they couldn't have known that when they tuned in.
I think
they couldn't have known that I wasn't going to be there.
I think they knew pretty quick and decided that that was. So that's all to say, I need you.
And I need you, Chris. Yes.
We're a good thing that go together. I've heard people say that they enjoy you and me interacting together, which means...
Well, in the spirit of today's show, we enjoy each other.
Yes, right? Indeed. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect little segue. Today, we're going to consider narcissism in our culture and the way that we see it and the way that it manifests, and then responses to narcissism that can be helpful and life-affirming.
Well, Chris, I wanted to start, if I could, because you were the one who raised the topic, and I was curious what instigated that.
If I look at our culture, I see excessive individualism.
Mm-hmm.
And if I would define narcissism as excessive self-love, we are all self-centered to a degree. And so then it becomes a question of proportionality. What's too much? And so narcissism, to my mind, is this excessive self-love that leads to some unhealthy consequences for individuals and for society.
Yes, I absolutely agree with all of that. And narcissism, by its very definition, has another component to it, which is that there is a lack of caring, a lack of empathy for others. So it is self-love combined with lack of empathy, lack of a deep uncaring about others unless there's something in it for me.
Self-absorption would be another way to say it.
Yeah. It's a funny topic because as soon as you mentioned it, my feeling was like, oh yeah, let's totally go there because like I feel like we're swimming in a sea of it. But identifying it or pointing it out or getting it at sources or how we can combat it is not always so apparent. So I'm looking forward to today's show, Chris.
Do you agree with me that it's natural to have some degree of narcissism?
I guess I would separate, I would make a distinction between a sense of self-worth and a sense of overimportance. I think that to be healthy, we have to have a sense of self-worth, right? I mean, just self-preservation, self-worth. Without having a necessarily having an overblown sense of our self-importance. Once it gets overblown, then we're into narcissism. Once we're into that, not only am I important, but you are not. Unless you could become important if you have something to offer me. I guess I'm not seeing it as a continuum. I'm seeing them as different things. But I could be wrong.
Yeah, we might be getting into splitting hairs with that.
A little parsing there. The research that I read in preparation for today ties a lot of it to rabid individualism, which is something you and I were talking about before we came on the air. Researchers were looking at rates of narcissism or the presence of narcissism within society overall just after World War II, where people were working together for a common good, had been through some seriously difficult times together, and so came out of that realizing that they needed one another. Once you get out beyond World War II, you get into the baby boom, the boomers. You've got a generation that is growing up in some financially pretty secure times. And so you start to see in that context, people are able to function as if they are, the whole individualism, rabid individualism strand begins to really, really get steam. And so this group of researchers was seeing a rise in narcissism in society as a consequence of that.
So one slice at this would be to think about narcissism as it manifests in an individual life and how it manifests in society. So I wanted to draw a connection to certain practices, certain things that go on in American culture today that I would trace back to self-absorption and also a sense of not having limits. Limitlessness, I think, is also a part of narcissism. I'm wondering if you can help me through what I'm trying to get at with this sense of limitlessness. It's something I think it's important, especially thinking about American culture. There's a limitlessness. We don't feel bound or restricted. And maybe that's the connection to narcissism, that the narcissist sees no limit to what the self is entitled to or should be able to have or acquire. Does that make sense? That's what I'm trying to get to when I'm talking about limitlessness as being a feature of a narcissistic.
Yes, I think limitlessness is in part what the researchers were pointing to when they talked about times of essential ease. People can get what they need pretty easily. Many people can. Certainly there's many people who can't. And part of the reason that continues to be true is because of the degree of narcissism within our society. We just, and you know, you and I touched on this at the Trump rally. So for our listeners who didn't catch that show, Chris and I went underground as, we didn't really go underground, but we went in as sociological anthropologists. We got press passes to a Trump rally and went and interviewed people who were waiting on the line to get in to be a part of this rally. And one of the things that we uncovered, you know, in terms of commonalities between folks, and we also made it clear that they're not a homogenous group, but among the commonalities we found were things like, I got mine. You know, as long as the system is working for me, I don't care who it's not working for. So periods in history where there is a general sense of ease produce rabid individualism, and the rabid individualism gives rise to narcissism, at least according to this one group of researchers. So I guess, Chris, my question for you is, beyond the sort of individual, how do you see this playing out in our society overall?
In addition to excessive individualism being a feature of narcissism, Shana, I think there's a theology or an atheology of the self on display here. The self becomes the principal authority and arbiter of everything without being tethered to anything greater. And if that's the case, like if my own self is sovereign over all, then what are the threats to my sovereign self? Those would be old age and death. These are the ultimate,
the ultimate threats.
Limits to the sovereign self that rules over all.
Oh, that's fascinating.
So I think that's one reason our culture has such a difficult time with death and aging.
And aging, yeah. That is fascinating. So if that is omnipresent, how do you see that shaping and forming society? How does it play out?
It means we're pain intolerant and we don't grieve very well.
Ergo the opioid epidemic?
Yes. So I would draw a connection between, it's not just the opioid disaster, but more broadly,
pain avoidance.
Exactly. I would draw a connection between our narcissistic culture and how we avoid pain at all costs. Now, it's not cause and effect. I'm not blaming those who are engaged in pain avoidance and saying, oh, your problem is that you're a narcissist. No, that's too simple. What I do think is going on is that a narcissistic culture does not prepare us for the inevitable, unavoidable pains of life. And so when the storms come, we are not prepared. We don't have the resources available culturally for people to draw on when they are in psychic pain. And I mean spiritual resources, Shana, community support resources. So the false teaching of a narcissistic culture is that the sovereign self should be beyond pain. And so the sovereign self has nowhere to turn when life happens, when pain happens. I think also the second thing is, because death is the ultimate check on the sovereign self, I mean, the sovereign self ends. You know, your power is, this is again from a non-theological, but this is from the cult of sovereign self, like I have all the authority. So death is a threat to be avoided at all costs. And therefore, I think
so
also
aging.
And aging. So we don't grieve very well as a culture. I think grief goes underground because it's somehow acknowledging limits and people don't want to go there. We just don't want to bother. We don't want to acknowledge that.
So the question I was going to ask you, Chris, was in, let's go with your theory that we're avoiding aging, we're avoiding death.
Because of narcissism in our culture.
Because of narcissism in our culture. And the inevitability of those two things are constantly before us. So obviously that's going to have an impact on the individual. But I guess my question is,
How does that play out societally?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question.
Because I'm thinking about what the researchers said about, well, within the definition of narcissism is an overamplified love of self paired with disregard for others, a lack of empathy for others. And I mean, for sure, our willingness as a nation to be divided in the way that we have been. And now we've, you know, really crossed the line and we're in a state where, you know, people are seriously being demonized. But we were primed for that. The soil was ready to receive that seed. It landed in fertile ground, and so it's been able to grow. And my sense is, because as a society we are all tolerating a degree of narcissism, that we will tolerate lack of caring for others, for the other side, certainly. I mean, whoever the other side is for you.
Yeah. If our narcissistic culture is related to our inability to grieve publicly, that's somehow shameful. And if narcissism is also connected to our inability to have empathy with each other, then it would make sense that our inability to grieve together societally is connected to our lack of empathy.
Well, and if you pair that inability to grieve with the frequency of at which we have serious things to grieve over, you wind up with a culture that is not only steeped in narcissism, but also PTSD. That is not a healthy society. And you know, the more we talk about it, the more it sort of, it's, I hate to say it, but it rings true. It feels, you know, if the shoe fits, you know, you put it on. And while it's not a shoe that I want to don, it does seem to fit.
So one way faith communities can be countercultural is to enable grieving to happen communally. Healthy faith communities do that. And I hasten to add for our audience, it doesn't have to be a faith community
right,
to happen. You can create small, I wonder if you in your post-traumatic, I'm not getting the right phrase.
Your critical incident stress management stuff.
In your critical incident response groups and gatherings, when you're addressing
absolutely.
That, you can create a community that can grieve together.
And
it's not a church, it's not a faith community.
Schools, I've seen schools do it really well. Because they are a community, the challenge for those who, the challenge in our society today is we are so rabidly individualistic that we have just tons and tons and tons of people who are not part of a community in any sort of committed way. So they haven't given something of themselves up, sacrificed something of the individual self in order to be part of a larger group. And so you've got a lot of people who are out there who don't have community. And you know, you and I have talked about this before. That's something that worries me, because we're not going to get through this one by one. But so let's go back to what you were saying, because you were saying, yes, communities of faith can help us work through certainly the grief part. How else do you see communities of faith having an impact on narcissism?
If an element of narcissism in American culture is pain avoidance and a sense that the world owes me a smooth ride, then a message from the world's religions and any kind of morally grounded worldview is that suffering is going to be a part of life, and transcending suffering involves
pain.
Service.
Pain is going to be a part of life.
What did
suffering I say? Is optional.
Ooh.
According to the Buddhists.
I was going to say, that sounds pretty darn Buddhist to me.
So, well, who was it? Paul said, we do not grieve as people who have no hope.
Hope, right.
Right? So even within Christianity, there's this idea that we can open ourselves to grief. We can open ourselves to pain because that's not going to send us into a bottomless pit.
So to respond to your question, Shana, I think service, again, whether it's religiously motivated or not, puts me in touch with the humanity, including the pain, of others.
Meeting God at the margin. Having that experience of where God dwells most prominently with those who have been marginalized or oppressed. I mean, because anybody who's done any kind of service work, who's been open to that, you know, who's not coming from a place of noblesse oblige, oh, those of us who have so much will, you know, give to the little people. If you're not coming from that place, if you're coming from a place of service and you walk into those places to do that work, don't you encounter something really profound there? I mean, some people would call it God. Some people would call it a deep sense of community, of love, of compassion, of empathy.
Yes. And to get to that place, you have to be willing to say, I am like that other person. That person is like me. But the narcissist wants to say, I'm not like those people. I'm special. I'm exceptional.
You know, one of the elements of narcissism is a destructive sense of entitlement, you know, which is something that you were hitting on there with, I am entitled to have a life that is free from pain. I am entitled to have all of this stuff. I am entitled to everything, basically, without limits. And I think that certainly within Judeo-Christian traditions, there are ample instances in Scripture where the least of these are lifted up as those whom are more likely to be chosen or embraced by God. For example, in the Jewish tradition, you know, you've got poor Moses who, you know, was a stutterer, and God called him, and, you know, he wanted to say, no, I'm not good enough. I am not slick enough of tongue, O Lord. You know, I'm really, really not up for this challenge. Certainly when you get into Christianity, you know, Jesus is telling followers, you know, hey, don't take the best seats at the table. You sit at the back of the room, and if they want to invite you forward, they will. Jesus is constantly lifting up, you know, the last shall be first and the first shall be last.
It's a theology of both and. You, individual, are beloved and precious and called by name, and find your connection to the preciousness of others.
It's, you know, interesting. This is in our show, was it last week's show that we did? And Whitman is talking about the same thing. You know, we have to both at the same time be the individual blade of grass and see ourselves as part of the larger lawn. And he actually was talking about how American democracy relies on that very capacity. And so here we are in, you know, 2019, that fabric is tattered at best and completely torn apart at worst. And where's our American democracy? In the toilet. Thank you very much.
Right, Shana. And I just point out that's the premise of our show, that there are spiritual and moral foundations to our democracy that don't get talked about, that are crucial, that are fundamental, that are foundational. To lift those things up, that's our aim. That's what we're trying to do. Shana, I just wanted to name one other facet of our culture very briefly that can be traced to narcissism, and that, I think, is our excessive acquisitiveness. I see a lot of our materialism as a bulwark against the terror of annihilation. And again, this is from the narcissistic point of view, the terror of annihilation of this sovereign self. And so acquisitiveness is a defense, as though, you know, as though you could take it with you, as though your bank account is some kind of guarantee of immortality.
Well, and how much of that is done to look good in the eyes of one's neighbors or in the eyes of society? I must have this fancy car in order to. No, and I would say certainly the degradation of our environment is an outcome of narcissism. We have refused, you know, we can do whatever, we can take whatever we want, we can do whatever we want, and the planet will just take everything, you know, that we give it. And I think Mother Nature is saying very clearly, yeah, not so much.
Let's bring this show home, Shana. What's the takeaway today?
Narcissism sucks. It's ruining our society. It's ruining our democracy. But guess what? We were the ones, we are at core responsible, and we can turn it around. How's that?
I love that. Takeaway for today.
Narcissism sucks. Oh, it so does. I mean, yeah, we all know that, right?
My additional takeaway is that healthy, authentic, spiritual practice is an antidote to excessive self-love. Authentic, healthy, spiritual practice gets us out of the narcissistic center and connects us with others, which is where meaningful life happens. That's my takeaway. Be curious, Shana.
Well, Chris, go deep and shine the light.
Our website, whatingods.com, WHATINGODS.
Folks, thanks for tuning in. Chris, great to see you.
So good to be with you, Shana.
Bye-bye.